Hello and welcome to Ag PhD Radio. I'm Darren Hefty.
And I'm Brian Hefty. Thanks for joining us today. Well, we've got a great show for you today. We're going to talk about weed control in pastures and non-crop land. As always, though, we are happy to take your phone call. If you want to call into the show, talk about our topic today or anything else going on in your farm, our phone number here is 844-44-AG-PHD. That's 844-442-4743. You can email us, radio@agphd.com, or send us a note on Twitter, AgPhD Media, Darren Hefty, or Brian Hefty. Well, we are live in the Morton studio today, and before we get to all these agronomic topics, Darren, I want to talk about the Monsanto lawsuit deal. I've been getting calls and emails about this. People are wondering what's going to happen with Roundup now that Monsanto lost this lawsuit that Roundup causes cancer. A jury decided
this in
California.
I like how
a
jury would decide that and not not a scientific-based group.
Yep. So,
especially on a herbicide that's been out for, 40-plus years now?
Yeah, it's been tested for 50. So anyway, so for all the responses, or this is going to be our response to all these emails we've been getting in. So, Alex, you can send this clip out to all those people. But basically, let's put it this way. Roundup has been out for, like Darren said, it's been over 40 years now. It's been tested for 50 or so. And the whole thing is, if we are in our society going to make emotional decisions and make decisions based on our thoughts and feelings, that is whole different than scientists who are making decisions based on science. And I'm not a scientist. Darren is not a scientist. The jury, as far as we know, was not made up of scientists who had done years of research trying to figure out if Roundup caused cancer or not. But for 50 years, the scientists in our country have all their tests have shown it does not. So for us to then make a decision after scientists have done this for 50 years of testing, we can decide, oh, well, I guess it does. There's no scientific evidence that it actually does cause cancer. So that's the first thing that I would say. And, you know, the next thing I guess I would get into is there are plenty of substances in our society that are known, proven cancer causers, yet we continue to use those every day. And you might say, what? No way. Come on. We'd ban those things. Really? Have we banned gasoline? That contains benzene. That is absolutely proven to cause cancer. And yet I see people at the gas pump all the time. I don't see them wearing their personal protective equipment like we do when we spray Roundup. It doesn't make any sense to me. And I had a guy the other day tell me he'd rather siphon gasoline than he would Roundup. And I'm like, are you nuts? It's absolutely proven that even a tiny little bit of gasoline is going to kill you. There's a known cancer causer in it. And Roundup, it's pure speculation whether it causes cancer. Look at the LD50, right? The SDS, it'll tell you what the LD50 is for Roundup. It'd take 5,000 times more Roundup to kill you than it would gasoline, and you're willing to siphon gasoline. Here's my whole point. Very often in society, once we start hearing things, we to some degree get brainwashed. And I'm just trying to say, for the last 10 years or so, Monsanto's been vilified. Now, don't get me wrong, I'm not here to try to defend Monsanto, or for that matter, to try to defend Roundup. I don't care if I have Roundup on my farm or not. I really honestly don't. It doesn't make any difference to me. If we have it, fine. It's a great tool. If we don't, I'm going to survive. It's going to be just fine. I got plenty of other ways to control weeds. No big deal to me. So all I'm trying to defend here is science. So if we're going to start making, you know, decisions based on emotion and speculation, then maybe we got to do that with everything else in our society, and our society is going to be in big time trouble real, real fast. So anyway, again, I don't care. It doesn't matter to me. If you want to go ban Roundup, well, that's fine, but it better be science based. That's all I can say. And, you know, If I'm stuck with no Roundup on my farm, I'm going to be just fine. We controlled weeds before Roundup. We'll control them after Roundup. Doesn't matter to me. Darren, you got anything to add?
Well, yeah, I think you've said enough about that. But,
I hate even having to talk about it.
It is pretty crazy, and you could address everything that goes around on Twitter or social media sites, and it's just ridiculous. I mean, I could say, well, this is terrible, we should all stop it, but if I don't have any research or real data to support what I'm talking about, what's the point?
Right.
It's just a waste of time.
Right.
So, if there's a court in, you know, in this case in San Francisco that wants to rule that and they want people to quit using chlorpyrifos and all this stuff, and it's like, great, give us an alternative then. What else can we do? And there isn't one. So, yeah, you don't like this product. Well, that's fine. Give us a better option then. You know, or if there is something wrong with it, then sure, but there's no data to support that.
Right. We have other options. I'm not as worried about the other options as I am worried about making decisions not based on science. So, again, let me just say this, because I hate talking about this stuff at all. We're not scientists. We're agronomists. So you can call that one type of science, but I mean, we're going to help you control weeds, raise better crops, control diseases, insects, all those types of things. And all we can do is go by what is labeled and approved in our country. So if you say, well, look, we're going to start taking a whole bunch of things off the market based on no science at all, I don't quite understand that. I really don't. When we leave products on the market like gasoline that's got proven cancer causers in there, and yet we're going to say, well, we don't really want ethanol. You can drink ethanol, before they denature it. I mean, it's alcohol. So, it's frustrating to us as agronomists when people are going to say, oh, the FDA, the EPA, the Department of Ag, they're doing bad work, when they have some fantastic scientists. And we believe that, I mean, we have to trust those people, I think, after all that work, and you can see all their data.
All right, today's program, we're gonna get into something a little more productive. We're going to talk about weed control in pastures and non-crop land. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Innovation is key to successful farming. Our innovative Thrive 3D application system saves you water, fuel, labor, and time. Get yours at no cost with FMC Freedom Pass. Simply commit to 3-year purchase minimums of Capture Thrive 3D insecticide and Anthemax herbicide to farm faster and with more freedom. Get more details at fmcagus.com/FMC Freedom Pass. Always read and follow label directions. Capture Thrive 3D insecticide is a restricted use pesticide. Anthemax herbicide and Capture Thrive 3D insecticide are not registered for sale or use in California.
In 1949, Morton Buildings constructed our first machine storage building to establish our bond with the farming community. Since then, our relationship has grown, and so have our product offerings. From the smallest specialized operation to the largest agricultural enterprise, we understand the needs of your business and continue to evolve to meet industry demands. Plus, when you build a Morton building, you're backed by the strongest warranty in the business. To learn more about the Morton Advantage, visit us online at mortonbuildings.com.
If there's one thing farmers know, it's to expect the unexpected. And when the unexpected happens, you need to change plans right now. Not only does AgroLiquid have the crop nutrition products you need anytime, anywhere your crop would benefit from added nutrition, but we also have an outstanding team of field agronomists ready to help you determine the best use of your fertilizer dollar. Find your winning team at agroliquid.com.
Grow corn that pays you back for your investment. Headline Amp fungicide from BASF is the smart choice. It consistently delivers plant health and disease control benefits like increased stress tolerance. You get more yield from an at-tassel application than any other fungicide, with best-in-class preventative and post-infection disease control. Grow smart with BASF and Headline Amp. Talk to your retailer today. BASF, we create chemistry. Always read and follow label directions.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio, broadcasting from the Morton Studio. Today, our topic is going to be weed control in pasture and non-crop land. We'll also be taking your calls and questions, too. Our phone lines will be open throughout the show at 844-44-AG-PHD. You can send us an email as well, radio@agphd.com, or find us on Twitter, AgPhD Media. Brian Hefty or Darren Hefty. Let's get to those phone lines. We got Jeff down in Kansas right now. You want to pull that up, Brian? Hey, Jeff, how are you doing today?
Pretty good. You guys?
We're doing well. We're doing well. What can we do for you?
Oh, I just wanted to make a comment about not caring about whether they ban Roundup or not. I understand what you're saying, but we need to be careful with what we're saying because it's just the tip of the iceberg. You know, they're attacking us from all fronts on this, and if something is proven as safe as what Roundup is on the chopping block, what about some of this other stuff?
I agree with you, Jeff. I agree. I don't think Brian was advocating we compromise and say, well, fine, take that one away. We don't care.
No,
I don't think he was saying that. I think he was saying, you know what, we've got other options we can use.
My point was I don't care if we have Roundup on the farm or not. I have other herbicides. But, yes, I care an awful lot about if all of a sudden as a society we're going to start banning things based on unscientific data. Or, for that matter, approving things with unscientific data. That is not what our country is all about and what we've been all about for 200 and some years. So that makes zero sense to me. So, yeah, we appreciate the comments and everything. We get worried about some of these things, too. They start... even though it's been reviewed, well, now we're going to review it again. It's like, well, didn't your scientists literally just look at some of these things? And didn't they just prove that it was fine? What's changed in the last year? The formulation hasn't changed. So what's changed?
Yeah. And I agree. I just wanted to point out, you know, it kind of came off a little.
yes.
Wrong, maybe a little, because we do need to care. I understand what you're saying, but we do need to care and advocate because, you know, they're after atrazine and valorzban. You know, hopefully we can get something done with that, you know, to get it back after that court ruling. You know, so it seems like they're just really attacking anything and everything they can from multiple fronts.
They are. And, you know, the other side of this whole thing is right on the label, even with the safest of products, there's still personal protective equipment. We still need to take precautions because in all cases, the dose makes the poison. I was just giving a speech the other day and I listed water at the very top. Did you know water has an LD50 also? If you consume a certain amount of water, it will kill you. So everything, everything is a poison. Everything is a toxin. It just all depends on the dose. So we want to be as careful and as cautious as we possibly can be around some of these things. Whether we view them today as safe or dangerous, we need to follow what the label says and everything else. And so, yeah, I mean, that's why all the science is out there. They're trying to, our government and our agencies are trying to protect us. So we just need to follow those things. And I don't know. Anyway, that's about all I got on that. Thanks a lot for the call, Jeff. Appreciate it.
Thank you, guys.
You bet.
Let's get back to the topic at hand of weed control and pasture and non-cropland. We got Clarissa Flourishinger. Oh, boy. You have a tough name to say, Clarissa.
Flourishinger.
It's a good German name, isn't it?
Yeah. you really got me all flustered right away to start the show off. Well, sorry about that, Clarissa. But let's talk about pasture weed control just a little bit and some of this non-cropland as well. You know, we hear a lot of questions on the show about thistles and some of the tough perennial weeds, but we also hear about desirable trees in the area and that kind of thing. So there's certainly some concerns when it comes to spraying this type of ground.
Absolutely. And right now you bring forth a really good point, getting a lot of calls about CRP management with some loose elm trees and maybe some Russian olives crawling out there in the CRP, and I'm sure your folks are getting that as well and kind of looking at how to control some non-desirable trees and then also pay close attention to those desirables as well. So we do have options for both.
All right. So when we're thinking about this, let's say that we're trying to control some of those non-desirable woody type species. What are some of the products that are working the best?
So we have a couple different options, and I appreciate you bringing that forth here. So most of the time when we're looking at those tough to control elm trees, which seem to be ones that I get calls on all the time here in North and South Dakota, and is true for a lot of Nebraska and Minnesota as well, we're looking at a Remedy Ultra and Tordon combination. So that can be, you know, mixing Remedy Ultra and Tordon yourself, or looking at something that's pre-mixed for like Pathfinder, if you're going to go out there and be aggressive in terms of doing a cut stump treatment or doing a basal bark application as well.
You know, we have some cases, and I got a question here from Randy, and Randy said, what about controlling some of the brush and thicket right along some desirable trees? Are there products I can use, or am I going to hurt my desirable trees as well?
So that's a really tough one. I would encourage Randy to reach out to his local hefty agronomist and then have them give me a call, and let's talk through exactly what kind of species we're looking at. Because you do have to be pretty targeted in that approach, because as you both know, right, when we have these shelter belts or a thicket of trees and we have desirables amongst undesirables, those roots are going to overlap. And ultimately, why we have such a great lineup with Corteva is that those herbicides are translocated right into the root system, and they're going to contact one another. So we really got to be careful and targeted in that approach. So if Randy wants to give his agronomist a call, and they can reach out to one of their Corteva AgriScience reps, that would be probably the most ideal situation.
All right. One other big challenge we run into is streams through some of these pastures. It seems like many of the pastures have got a stream or a stock dam or something like that. I know we have to watch out with Tordon where we're at, but are there some desirable products that you'd say, oh, here we go. If we've got a stream out there, not that you're going to spray it in the stream, but these are ones we can go right up to the edge.
Yeah, absolutely. So a lot of times right now, right, we're seeing some standing water in that Baltic area still because we're getting hounded with moisture, and we have these seasonably wet and dry lands or these creeks and things that run through pasture. Well, with Grazon Next and or Chaparral, the terminology goes both ways, minimize or overspray and stay back from that water's edge a few feet and minimize that overspray again. So those can be ideal products for going after thistle this fall, and just be conscientious so that you're not overspraying on that water. We definitely want to be careful around those water species.
Carissa, talk to us about the new formulation of 2,4-D, the 2,4-D choline, and how that's being utilized in pasture and non-cropland.
Absolutely. Yeah, and that can be a great fit along water's edge as well. Freelex. So Freelex is 2,4-D choline. So this is really exciting for us in the agricultural world to have a new formulation of 2,4-D. And this, what this choline technology truly brings to the field is, one, low odor. You really can't smell it. And non-volatility. So very, very, very low volatility in terms of it's going to stay put when you put it down. And we're seeing a lot of individuals really like mixing that with whether it's Chaparral in their pastures, or using Freelex as a standalone right along the roadside, right along your beans, and just to clean up those pesky weeds and annuals that we're seeing out there this time of year. But that 2,4-D choline brings a lot to the table with the low odor and low volatility, so it's an excellent option for us.
Now, there are so many options for excellent weed control that we've got in pastures and non-cropland. Carissa Florschinger, we really appreciate having you on the show today with Corteva, and thanks for giving us a little heads up on some of these products.
You bet. Thanks, Brian and Darren. I hope you guys have a great day, and safe harvest to everybody.
Stay tuned. We'll be right back with more Ag PhD Radio.
Farming in the dark? We've flipped the switch on. More insights, more options for more farmers. Introducing Smart Insight daily satellite imagery on farm weather stations, crop modeling, scouting. Alerts available in more locations than ever before. Smart Insight, the only crop monitoring and digital agronomy solution with daily insights. Visit farmersedge.ca for details.
They don't leave nicely. When worms and aphids attack your crop, fight back with Nudrin. Nudrin is a powerful insecticide that's applied after your crop has emerged. Its quick knockdown and almost immediate control stops worms and aphids in their tracks. Learn more about Nudrin and how to protect your crops from in-season invasions. Visit us at rotamnorthamerica.com. That's rotamnorthamerica.com.
Worried about weeds? Knock down tough species more efficiently and effectively with the Enlist Weed Control System. Enlist Duo Herbicide offers a convenient blend of new 2,4-D choline and glyphosate. For use in crops with the Enlist trait, Enlist Duo features the innovative Colex-D technology to provide near-zero volatility and minimized potential for physical drift. Farmers are discovering Enlist Duo stays where it's applied. And just as important, it wilts tough weeds quickly. Learn more at Enlist.com.
Increase your productivity with Hypro's Dual React Control System. The dual nozzle body design allows you to drive at the speed you want while maintaining the rate and droplet size you need. Hypro, helping you spray better.
Want to cut production costs without losing yield? The Soil Warrior can reduce trips across the field, optimize nutrient placement, and improve soil health. So you can lower production costs without losing yield. See what makes the Soil Warrior different and better at SoilWarrior.com.
Zero. Zilch. Zip. That's the total cases of resistance documented with Manzate ProStick. That's right. Zero. Zilch. Zip. Not all fungicides can say this, but Manzate ProStick from UPI can. This multi-site fungicide not only controls walnut blight, it plays a critical role in delaying the development of resistance, which is why Manzate ProStick is the foundation fungicide in all walnut blight control programs. For a recommendation, contact your PCA. Always read and follow label directions.
Farmers, you put a lot of money into growing the best crops possible every year, so it only makes sense to make sure every bit of that ends up in your tank. Estes patented concaves stop rotor loss with less grain damage. Best of all, they work in all crops. No more changing concaves. Call 765-650-4131 or visit EstesPerformanceConcaves.com and get what you harvest. That's 765-650-4131.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio, broadcasting from the Morton Studio today, talking about weed control in pastures and non-cropland, and also taking your calls and questions at 844-44-AG-PHD.
Hey, Darren, we got a call from Geronimo in Indiana. He didn't want to stick around, but he asked the question, I sprayed soybeans for a second time with Stratego and Warrior, but 8 hours later, I got an inch of rain. Did I lose my product? So for both the Stratego and the Warrior, the odds are pretty high. You still got most of the effectiveness out of them.
Well, what time of day were they sprayed?
Well, yeah, that's what I was just
going to get at. If they were sprayed just before dark, and then you had a dew set in, and then you had a rain right away in the morning,
you would have had
then you're
a lot
in trouble.
Less.
If you sprayed them in the morning after the dew was off, you had 8 hours of sunshine on them, you should be in good shape.
Yeah, but even so, with a lot of the fungicides, they're going to tell you they really want 24 hours before rainfall. And with insecticide, we know that some will probably be left on that plant, and you're going to lose probably a little bit. So it's nothing like I'm going to go right out and spray again, but is it possible you lost a little bit of your residual? Yes, it's possible. But I would still say you're going to get most of the effectiveness out of that unless, like Darren said, it was so wet all the way up until that rain came that the product didn't get absorbed into the plant. All right, let's get back to the phone lines here. We've got Miles on from Arkansas. Miles, how are you today?
Hey, good afternoon, gentlemen. How are y'all doing?
We're doing great.
Well, it's actually a good day here. We're finally getting some rain.
Oh, good, good. All right, so you've been dry for a while. Have you been dry like the Missouri guys have been dry?
Oh, yes, sir. It's been bad. Hardly any rain. We got a rain a couple weeks ago, but that was the first one in about 2.5 months.
Oh, boy.
It's hot and dry, and it's pretty rough, but hopefully this rain isn't coming too late.
You know, you think about our topic today, pasture weed control. When you get those hot and dry conditions, those weeds harden off, and they're pretty tough to kill. Do you try to get your pasture spraying done in the spring? Do you prefer to do stuff in the fall, or you do a little bit of both?
Mainly we try to do it in the spring, before the good rains come, and then do a little bit in the fall for such as our blackberry bushes or whatnot. But this is such a bad time, you know, with hardly no rain, and then with the cattle on there, if not coming up with grass, so you tend to, even as much as you try to manage it, you tend to overgraze your ground, so then that brings up more weeds. So this year's, these dry years are hurting for us, because A, you get less hay for the winter, and then B, it actually costs you more money for chemical this season, because we're actually having to do some late season spraying now with this rain, so we can maybe get a little bit of decent foliage out of the ground.
You know, you mentioned one real challenge, overgrazing. I know we see it in our state too, because most of the time we're on the dry side. And while it looks great in the spring, often in the summertime we think it's going to keep raining, and then when it quits and it just doesn't rain, like you say, all of a sudden you go 2.5 months and you get nothing. That's pretty tough, because those cattle are eating every day. What do you do with that? Are you trying to move them a little bit, rotational grazing, or what kind of strategies do you have in that situation?
Yes, sir. We always try the rotational grazing. You know, just the old adjective, when the grass grows fast, you move the cattle fast, and when it grows slow, you move them slow. But like you were saying, in these dry times, it's a fickle animal, because you have to, like you said, they're always eating, and you're just either A, trying to, hopefully that you planned out throughout the years your the right stocking rate, and if not, then you either have to find ground or get rid of the animals, or have to, your feed cost goes up. But it's just it's a bad area. We're blessed with one thing, we have a lot of extra hay ground that we don't have cattle on, so we're able to move the animals in there. But then that's a challenge too. It's how long do you leave them in there, because you still need the hay for the wintertime, and you know, we're getting less than half of what we normally get per cutting. So it's just a management nightmare.
Yeah, and then you throw in weeds or wow, they're just eating up nutrients and taking moisture away. Like you mentioned, some of these bushes and this brush that's out there. What do you do to control that? Are you cutting some of that and then treating stumps, or are you mainly just spraying over the top of it and trying to kill it that way?
Well, it all depends on what it is. If it's, like you were saying, this time of year when it gets really, really tough and hard to kill because it's grown up, what we'll try to do is, if we get a good rain like that, you know, like I said, we'll just have to spend the extra money and run bush hogs through it and knock it down a little bit, and then get a nice, good leafy substance on it, spray it, usually with Grazon and 2,4-D and maybe a little Remedy if we have some woody stuff, and then keep the animals off and try to get what you can. But it's just a lot of the guys around here, you know, they'll mow it and then they'll just fertilize it, and they say, oh, the heck, whatever comes up, comes up. But you're, you know, if you do that, you're spending a lot of money just for nothing, because, you know, just to bush hog itself, that's $45 to $50 an hour. And then your chemical, when you put that on, that's another $10 an acre for the chemical, plus the 5 to 10 to put it on if you do it yourself. So, you know, you can't just go out there, and you got to have a good plan, especially this time of year with being so dry. It's pretty rough.
Yeah, I totally agree. It's all about having a great plan going into this, and hopefully weathering the storm here. Well, glad to hear you're getting some rain, Miles, and hopefully it keeps on coming for you. We'll be rooting for you.
All right. Thank you, sir. Appreciate what you guys do. Have a great day.
Yeah, thanks a lot. Really appreciate it. Let's go down to Nebraska. We've got Dennis with us. Dennis, how's it going today?
Oh, real good. We're just waiting for rain. It looks pretty promising this afternoon. First rain we'll have in a couple of weeks down here in southeast Nebraska. It's getting terribly dry.
Yeah, this time of year, we need those rains to keep coming, that's for sure. I hear you're getting some insects, though, in the soybeans, and I happened to be in Nebraska last week and saw some Dectus stem borer in the soybean stem. Is that the same thing you're seeing?
Right. It's really come on the last 2-3 weeks now, and even fields that were sprayed, which, you know, they were spraying for other things, it's not going to affect it. So I just was wondering, is there anything, have you heard any of the seed companies, anything that they're going to start putting in these beans for this problem, like BT and corn and that? Or
well, that's a great question. We don't have a BT trait offering in our country for insects. But when we think about Dectus stem borer, one of the things that I'm really curious about is seed treatments. And I'd seen some data from a few years back from a product that didn't get labeled fipronil. Didn't get a soybean label, but we did have some uptake on that, and it had some promising results. But Brian, I know I talked to you about this. You said it doesn't look like it's likely to get labeled just because it's getting used in a number of other situations.
No, it's not because it's getting used in a number of other situations. It's because they pulled labeling from a whole bunch of other things, and BASF doesn't really want to push this because they don't know that there are a lot of acres out there yet for that. And then we also talk about gall midge larvae and soybeans. I mean, there are a number of things. So I don't know if that'll get approved in the future or not. But yeah, in terms of a biotech trait, you know, there are things in other countries in soybeans. I just don't know if we're going to have that in our country or not. I haven't heard anything.
Yeah, our only shot is controlling them when they're in the beetle stage. When they're adults, we can get them. You can utilize a pyrethroid. It will kill the beetle. It's just the timing is tough because in Nebraska, I know talking to agronomists in your area, they say, well, it's a 2 to 4 week time period. Well, we aren't going to be out spraying every week, and that makes it pretty difficult to get a great kill on them.
Yeah, it's just, I know last year we had this windstorm with heavy rain, and there was 10 to 15 bushel yield loss. I mean, you just cut them things right off the ground, and they laid flat, and you couldn't get them or nothing, you know. And so I have found some where I've cut them open and that, and then I haven't found the larvae in there. So I don't know if that's leaving or what, but most of it's still got it in there, and they're eating that. But they're not eating all the way down the bottom yet, so which they'll probably do later on anyways, what they do.
Yeah, we just kind of hope they come later, but this year with all the heat we had early in the season in May and June, unfortunately, I think they're going to cause some damage. Well, thank you so much for the call, Dennis. We really appreciate it. We got some more information on this issue, Deck to Stem Borer, on our Ag PhD Field Guide app as well. All right, we'll get back to talking about weed control in pastures and non-cropland right after this.
Every season, you try to raise the bar to achieve your best corn yield ever, but disease can stand in the way, like gray leaf spot, northern corn leaf blight, anthracnose leaf blight, and southern rust. New Dilaro fungicide can stop them. Two different modes of action work on the diseases for the entire spray interval, delivering best-in-class dual-mode-of-action residual efficacy for extended performance. It's the help you need for personal best yields. Keep raising the bar with Dilaro from Bayer. Always read and follow label instructions.
Farming in the dark? We've flipped the switch on. More insights, more options for more farmers. Introducing Smart Insight daily satellite imagery. On-farm weather stations, crop modeling, scouting, alerts available in more locations than ever before. Smart Insight, the only crop monitoring and digital agronomy solution with daily insights. Visit farmersedge.ca for details.
You don't settle. You're driven. You're committed. You're a farmer. And you are relentless. Mycogen Seeds is relentless too. We won't stop. We never settle. We don't back down. We work hard and we work smart to get to know you and your farm and make sure you get the right seed on the right acres. See for yourself at Mycogen.com or talk to your local Mycogen Seeds dealer and let us prove our relentless dedication to you.
One thing growers need to succeed is freedom to choose what they put in their fields. That's why FMC Freedom Pass Agronomic Rewards make it easy and economical to pair your favorite seed brand with products proven to protect crops throughout the season. Choosing Authority brand herbicides and other proven FMC products pays more than ever before. Calculate your potential incentive at fmcagus.com/FMC Freedom Pass today. Always read and follow label directions. Authority brand herbicides are not registered for sale or use in California.
If there's one thing farmers know, it's to expect the unexpected. And when the unexpected happens, you need to change plans right now. Not only does AgroLiquid have the crop nutrition products you need anytime, anywhere your crop would benefit from added nutrition, but we also have an outstanding team of field agronomists ready to help you determine the best use of your fertilizer dollar. Find your winning team at agroliquid.com.
When looking for someone to help with your risk management, a key component to look for is patience. Patience to bring you along in the process at your own speed. Patience to learn about your operation, and patience to not only discuss what strategies may be effective for your plan, but why they would be effective. That's the strength of Grain PhD. I'm Darren Hefty. When you're ready to become more engaged in your risk management, Grain PhD can assist you with that process. Visit grainphd.com to learn more. Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio. Broadcasting from the Morton studio today, talking about pasture weed control and also non-cropland weed control. Brian, we haven't talked much about this yet, but what about dandelions? This is one we see in lawns quite often. We see in non-cropland, but we're also seeing them out, especially in overgrazed pastures. Miles brought up this situation they're having in Arkansas of, hey, it just got dry on us, and now the pasture got overgrazed because we were expecting it was going to keep raining and grass would keep regrowing.
Well, it's one of those things where as ranchers, and I mean, we have pasture too. Now, we don't have our own livestock out there anymore. We rent that out. But I would just say it's one of the things we have to treat our pastures just like we treat our crop ground. So that means continuous monitoring and continuous adjustment as the season moves along if things do turn out especially dry or, for that matter, especially wet. And it's really hard because what are you going to do? Get rid of animals? You're going to all of a sudden add a bunch more acreage? I mean, you can't do that. So, you know, then it just comes back to, hey, you have to go out and buy some feed source and maybe put them in a lot for a little bit, let the grass regrow. I don't know what else to say. Other than we have to manage what we have as good as possible. So that's why we talk all the way through everything from, hey, we want to make sure not only are we rotational grazing, but we're fertilizing properly based on soil tests, and we're controlling the weeds very well. And there are a lot of great herbicides out there for dandelions. I mean, my favorite is probably going to be Distinct. I really like Tordon, Milestone, you know, for some of the perennial weeds, but I mean, Distinct is going to knock the dandelions back for a lower cost. You know, a lot of people are going to say 2,4-D. Well, you can use 2,4-D, but you got to make sure that rate's really high and it's going to take multiple treatments, and I just prefer Distinct dollar for dollar.
I agree with you. And dandelions, we do an excellent job controlling them in the fall, so we're coming up on one of the best times of year to try and get them under control. Let's go back to the phone lines here. We got Cedric down in Louisiana. Cedric, how's it going?
Hey, Darren. How you doing today?
We're doing well. We're doing well. What are things looking like in Louisiana?
Looking pretty good, man. We baled some hay about 3 weeks ago, right after the 4th of July, and I sent you and Brian a soil sample, and wonder if you had a chance to look over it yet.
You know what? That's a great question, Cedric, because... Oh,
Alex
said he did print it. Ah, oh, he gave it to Brian. Ha! I'm looking around, Cedric. I'm like,
where
in the world is this soil test? Because I don't have it here.
Yeah, I thought we were talking soil test. Yeah, there's one soil test. Okay, and yeah, I just got confused because it said Canada.
He's easily confused, Cedric. Yeah,
well,
don't worry about it.
Yeah, so I wasn't thinking Louisiana.
See, Brian's gonna hit one of those age milestones coming up like in another day, one of those big ones.
It literally says Manitoba on here,
him nervous.
All right, so anyway, in terms of this soil test, 5.6 pH, that's the first thing that I'm looking at. So what crop or crops do you raise on there, Cedric?
No, it's a bahia grass for hay.
Okay, all right.
Yeah.
So it's a little bit on the low side for a grass crop. You know, if we were going to raise certain crops, like we say blueberries, we talk about that one all the time because that's like super low for pH.
Yeah, it'd be about ideal.
Yeah, but
honestly, though, the grasses, Brian, can take a little bit lower pH for the most part. And the thing I like about a little bit lower pH, when it's a little more acidic, we seem to have better availability with some of the micronutrients like manganese. I know on our farm we've really seen that when we can get our pH into the lower sixes or even upper fives, we see more manganese availability. All right,
yep,
Brian, what
and
else
that's
jumps
true,
out?
But if it was me, I might consider just a tiny little bit of lime. It's only going to take a little lime because you got light soil. It's a 6 for cation exchange capacity. The other things I see, your potassium's only at 2%, and you only have 48 parts per million of potassium, so that's really low. The phosphorus, 5 parts per million available. That's really low. Then the other things, zinc is 0.6 parts per million. So that's really low. Copper's really low, and boron's really low. So you've got five nutrients here that I look at as all things that today,
which honestly, very in well lighter could be soil though, Brian, in a 6 CEC, you're going to have to apply nutrients every year. I mean, you aren't going to have boron hanging around in your soil.
Well, not
very long.
Boron or sulfur or nitrogen,
but
certainly
even
not.
Even at this, level of a cation exchange capacity, we're going to see a little bit of movement with potassium.
Yes, with potassium too. But I mean, phosphorus, that's probably not going anywhere. Copper, that's not going anywhere. Zinc's not going anywhere. So, you know, those things, if you build them up, they should be there at least for a few years. But yeah, you've got five nutrients that I look at here, you know, in addition to certainly nitrogen. We know that your grass is going to need nitrogen every year. I think everybody's well aware of that. But yeah, I'm looking at P, K, zinc, copper, and boron as all, to me, critically low. And if you added those, you're going to be in much better shape.
All right, let me ask you this, Darren and Brian. But after the first cut of hay, we added a ton per acre of lime.
Okay.
That's going to push that pH up some force?
Yeah. Yep, the lime is going to raise that pH up just a little bit. Now, that is going to depend on what type of lime you have. In other words, what you're looking for here with the lime, the number one factor is the fineness of the lime. The smaller the particle size, the faster it's going to change the pH, and the more it's going to change that pH. So I don't know how much is passing through a 60-mesh or 100-mesh sieve, but I would just tell you that's the number one factor we're looking for with lime. We got a sample in the other day. A guy sent some to us, and it was very coarse material. And I said, well, it's going to change your pH just slightly, but not much. So in your case, for example, if you would have had the sample he sent in and put a ton on, I'd say you might go from 5.6 to 5.9. But you're certainly not going to go from 5.6 to the, you know, 6.1 to 6.3 kind of range that's going to make me feel a little better.
Yeah, because I got it from a co-op, and I could it was heavy and cakey-like when it was coming out the back of the truck from this co-op that I got it from. It wasn't very fine, like you said it should be.
Yep. We're looking for a fine material, but analysis is going to show us that. The other thing with lime, depending on your source, sometimes there are other nutrients that can be in that lime. So we test lime all the time just to anything we're going to put on the farm. I test it ourselves rather than trust somebody else's test. I mean, I send it into a lab, but I'm just saying rather than trust my supplier's test, I like to test it or have it tested myself so I know for sure what I'm putting on my land.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you.
You bet.
For the advice. Thank you, sir.
You bet. Thanks, Cedric. Appreciate it.
Yeah, the pasture fertility is one that we see a lot of nitrogen going out, and a lot of guys are going just straight in. But I really applaud Cedric for pulling that complete analysis, taking a look at, all right, what other things can I do out there? Because it's often very much like your crop ground. It's the same kinds of things because it's the same parent material.
Agreed. But we only had one test. And I guess I never did ask him how many acres we're talking about or anything else. So I know a lot of livestock producers that might have 500 or 1,000 acres of pasture. Okay, it's the same thing with crop ground. I want to see multiple tests out there. Ideally, I'd like to see 2.5 or 5 acre grids. And you might say, oh my goodness, I don't want to spend that kind of money on soil testing. Well, number one, you're not going to do it constantly. It's not something that you even would have to do every year or anything like that. But let's at least see where we're at and see where we're at in all these different spots. Because I know in our crop ground, when we've done the same thing, we see enormous differences in terms of soil pH, fertility levels, cation exchange capacity, just everything. And that really changes how I'm going to spend the money. So here's the way I like to think about soil testing in general. I know already I'm going to spend on our own farm here hundreds of thousands of dollars on fertilizer. I'm just trying to figure out how do I best invest those dollars so it makes me more money. It's kind of like if you were going to go buy stocks and if you had great information on a company that you know is going to do well in the future or do poorly, whatever. At least you have great information versus blindly throwing your money into the stock market. Who do you think has a better chance to win or lose? Warren Buffett when he has all that information, or you or me when we say, well, I don't really care. I'm just going to throw some money in. I'm not doing any research. I'm not going to see the company or anything else. Who do you think is going to do better? It's the same kind of deal with soil testing.
I think we've got some decent soil here for the most part. It's light, a 6 CEC, but we've got almost 2% organic matter. We just are low in some of the nutrients, which I would expect in a low CEC soil. So it's something where we could build it up. One thing I'd be curious about, you mentioned some of these micros, Brian, like copper and boron and zinc. When we did some trial work with micronutrients back 10 years ago or maybe even a little bit more in our pasture, the cattle went right to those areas where we added the micros.
Yeah.
They really preferred that hay versus the rest of the pasture. So it'd be interesting to see if Cedric gets the same results. Stay tuned. We'll be right back after this.
This is Dave Robbins reporting from what can only be described as a cornfield under attack. With me is Jim Stafford, a local corn grower. Jim, what's happening here?
Mites, banks, two-spotted and carmine, you name it. This corn is under attack.
What are the plans, if any, to deal with this serious situation?
Well, we're not going to stand for it. We're going to fight the mite.
How?
ZLSC Miticide. Just one application by Grounder Air gives long-lasting mite control. Now that field corn, popcorn, corn for seed, and corn grown for silage are all labeled, mites don't stand a chance.
But what about their eggs?
ZLSC affects mites in all stages, even eggs.
What kind of timetable are we talking about?
ZLSC reaches mites under the leaf where they feed and hide with translaminar activity. For long-lasting protection after a single application, apply ZLSC at early threshold or as a preventative treatment.
ZLSC. It lasts so mites can't. Contact your local Valent representative or Valent authorized retailer for more information. Always read and follow label instructions.
No two seasons are the same, so you need your crops to rise ready for whatever's in store. Now, there's one simple decision that provides coverage on four fronts. The Acceleron portfolio offers protection against disease, insects, nematodes, and even moisture or nutrient stress. In the fight against the unpredictable, rise stronger with Acceleron seed treatment products. Learn more at AcceleronSAS.com/rise ready. Performance may vary. It's important to use proper PPE when handling treated seed.
Hey, Bill, any advice to control tough weeds and rootworms?
That's easy, Jim. Buy two, save three.
Wait, for weeds and rootworms?
Buy two, save three. Combine your Impact or new Impact Z herbicide purchase with a qualifying insecticide and save $3 per acre.
Buy two, save three. That is good advice.
For details, go to buy2save3.com. Impact, Impact Z, and Buy Two Save Three are trademarks owned by Amvac Chemical Corporation. All rights reserved. Impact Z is a restricted-use pesticide. Always read and follow label instructions.
White mold on soybeans is a costly problem. Andiamo fungicide from SipCam Agro is a powerful and affordable solution. Here's why. Andiamo moves rapidly throughout the plant, providing fast and lasting control. And Andiamo features a low use rate, broad disease spectrum, and a better return on investment than other fungicides. For best performance on white mold, apply Andiamo at first bloom. Learn more about Andiamo fungicide by visiting SipCamAgro.com or calling 877-898-9514.
With Preaxor's Xemium brand fungicide in your soybeans, it's hard to know which comes first, disease control or plant health. Preaxor fungicide is proven to deliver both with consistent performance, so your soybean crops get plant health benefits like growth efficiency and stress tolerance, plus longer-lasting disease protection, all contributing to maximum yield potential. Grow smart with BASF and Preaxor fungicide. Talk to your retailer today. BASF, we create chemistry. Always read and follow label directions.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio. We're broadcasting from the Morton studio today. We've been talking about weed control in pastures and non-cropland and wanted to hit just a couple others, Brian. Leafy spurge. This is one we get feedback from people in, especially in the western part of the U.S., saying, you know, there are some bugs that are helping with our leafy spurge. It just takes several years for them to build up. What do we do in the meantime? Do we wait several years or do we go ahead and spray now?
I have a really difficult time waiting several years. Tordon, by the way, so we were talking earlier in the show about human safety and pesticides. Tordon is very safe to humans and livestock. Again, you know, anything can be a poison, but Tordon is very safe. With Tordon, it's fantastic on leafy spurge. The price has come down in the last few years. You're going to spend maybe, let's call it $14 an acre if you went out there with a quart, that should permanently eliminate your leafy spurge patch. It will kill the roots and all. It will leave residual for many years. So it's a fantastic product. It used to be our product of choice for thistles also, but today I would say Milestone. We prefer Milestone. Milestone's a little bit more expensive if you're going to run with the full 7-ounce rate, but it is even better than Toradon. It also will leave you several years' worth of residual. These two things are just fantastic tools we have in those non-crop areas or pasture areas. You have to be careful with both of them, though, because they can kill trees, Toradon especially. So gotta be cautious.
Toradon's so much better on leafy spurge. There's really no substitute for that one.
It is, but again, Milestone is my preference for thistles.
But okay. It's not going to get the spurge. I just want to make sure we're clear on that.
Yep, that's right. So if you have leafy spurge, then you better go out there with Toradon, and you're gonna still be really good on thistles, just not quite as good as Milestone. Then you go to, let's say, Chaparral for brush. So for years, Toradon was my brush choice, but Chaparral is a combination of Milestone and Ally. And for many brush species, it's actually a little better than Toradon. So I'd probably say Chaparral there. I mentioned Distinct in the last segment. I really like Distinct. What Distinct is diflufenzapyr. That's the same active ingredient you're going to find in Status, and a splash of dicamba. So that diflufenzapyr is amazing. It's my favorite weed control product for annual broadleaf weeds. I love Distinct and Status. The only difference is Status has a corn safener, and it's about three times the price. Distinct is really inexpensive for what you get. It's about $9 for the full rate. And the 6-ounce rate of Distinct is equal to 7.5 ounces of Status. A lot of people only use 2.5 or 5 ounces of Status because they go, oh, it works great. Well, just think, for $9, you get 6 ounces of Distinct equal to 7.5 ounces of Status. It's absolutely hands down better than dicamba or 2,4-D. If you start using it, you will not quit using it if you just have annual, or for that matter, even some biennial weeds in your pastures. So I'd way rather have you use that than 2,4-D or dicamba. The last thing that I wanted to mention, Darren, was Freelex is the new 2,4-D choline, where we're just not seeing the volatility or drift out of that like we did with old 2,4-D. Believe me, I've killed everything. I've killed trees, flowers, other crops, you name it, with 2,4-D because I was dumb when I was younger and didn't spray it properly. Even when I did spray it properly, the stuff still moved. With Freelix, we're not seeing any of that. So we really are big believers in Freelix. If you're still using old 2,4-D, yeah, if you've got absolutely zero sensitive plants anywhere near you within a mile or two, fine, keep using old 2,4-D. It's just slightly cheaper. But otherwise, switch to Freelix.
All right, anything else on the pastures you want to talk about, Brian?
No, that's really it. It's fertility, it's rotational grazing, and then you got to get good weed control. Oh, I guess there is one last thing. A lot of people talk about fall spraying. I don't really like the term fall spraying because you've got to spray before your first killing frost. Well, if you're in North Dakota, that first killing frost could come before fall technically starts on September 21st. So fall spraying would be a terrible time to spray. You want to spray, like I say, at least a week or two before that first hard killing frost. You can't have a killing frost, otherwise you're not going to get the herbicide into the plant very well. That's it. Now I'm done.
All right, let's go to the Ag PhD mailbag.
It's the mailbag!
All right, first one I got here is from Chad. He said, hey guys, I have some Roundup Ready alfalfa that I need to kill this fall. I'm wondering what would be the best product to use? Let's see. He didn't say, Darren, if he's going to plant anything in it this fall. I have to assume he's probably not going to plant till spring. What would you think?
Yeah, I would agree with you. Probably not till spring.
Okay.
And you know, here's the thing: when you've got something, you're coming right back in, then the residual is going to be something that you definitely have to watch out for.
Yes. So worrying about the residual, I'd probably recommend. Well, I'd really think hard about Distinct. A lot of guys have just used, so if you can't use Roundup anymore, then they'll either use dicamba or 2,4-D, but for me, I may consider Distinct. But let's put it this way. I don't care if you use 2,4-D, dicamba, or Distinct. You're not going to kill 100% of the plants out there. Yeah. And even if you do want to get it as soon as you can here, and then winter's going to
get it in the fall.
Yep. Well, or late summer.
Yeah.
Late summer.
Yeah,
because
you
want
to have
fall.
Winter kill to help you.
Yep.
That's your best bet.
Yep. You want to get the best kill possible now. You want to have winter kill finish off a lot of the plants. But still, you're going to have some stragglers next year. So if it's Roundup ready alfalfa, and you plant Roundup Ready soybeans, straight Roundup Ready soybeans in there, you have no way to control that volunteer alfalfa. So either you need to plant Extend or Enlist or maybe even Liberty beans. That'd be okay. It's not, Liberty's not real great in alfalfa, but that'd be okay. Otherwise, you're going to have to plant corn or some other crop.
Yeah, I like the corn option or Extend soybeans. That would be my
yep.
choice.
Yes,
and agreed. I would get out there. Here's the other thing. You've got a perennial plant with a deep, extensive root system. You've got to deliver a lethal dose down there, and it's tough to do because there aren't many products outside of Roundup that are going to get down through that root system. Well, obviously, Roundup Ready alfalfa, it's not going to help. So we've got to have a really strong rate of a 2,4-D or a dicamba to do that. So just be careful with what you're doing. If you're using a 2,4-D, I'd certainly want to use Freelex or Enlist One or one of those products with the new 2,4-D cholines. You wouldn't have as much concern about the drift. With the dicamba, use all those best management practices so you don't have any off-target movement. All right, another question here. This one comes from Jim in Ohio. Jim said, I have ironweed, and I'm really wondering what will actually kill ironweed. Not just hurt it, kill it. What should I spray, what rate, and when? It's in my pasture, and it's a tough weed. Well, thanks for the question, Jim. It is a really tough weed. There's no doubt about that, and it really competes well. So often we've seen late summer applications like we've been talking about being effective but not completely taking it out, and generally it's two or three applications of different products before you get it. We're seeing a base treatment of something like a triclopyr, like a crossbow type product, or an aminopyrrolid, which would be like
Remedy Ultra.
Yeah, Remedy Ultra, there you go. Or aminopyrrolid, which would be a Milestone or a Grazon Next product. There are some guys going with straight dicamba and 2,4-D, like we were just talking about for the Roundup Ready alfalfa control. Or you could even use Roundup if you were just taking the pasture out, but I'm guessing you're leaving the grass in. So for me, I'd head with something like Remedy Ultra or Milestone product to try and get a good start this fall. Then next spring, you could come back and hit it again with something else. If you've got dicamba-tolerant crops right around it, I'd probably use dicamba. Otherwise, you may want to use 2,4-D, like one of the safer 2,4-D choline products like Freelex, for example. All right, one other question here. This one is from Corey. He said, I see a corn planter on your show occasionally that has tracks. What kind of planter would that be? Well, there are a few different kinds of planters. The yield track planter that has been marketed by some Case IH dealers, Norwood Sales up in North Dakota. They've got a planter that would be on tracks like that. I know we've seen some Harvest International planters on our show as well. I don't know if they're necessarily black as much as gray, but that could be a Harvest International.
With tracks?
I don't think
no,
any with tracks,
no,
though.
No.
So you're probably looking at that yield track planter. Thanks for the question, Corey, and thanks for watching our show, too. Really appreciate that. Thanks to everyone who called in with questions today, and thanks to everyone who was on the show, all of our guests, and thanks to you as well. Be sure to tune in each weekday for more Ag PhD Radio.